The Google Podcast app is going away in April. Right now, I want you to take a look at the podcast app you're using right now. Maybe it's time for a new one. Check out podcastapps.com and try a new one for free right now. That's podcastapps.com.
Hi, friends. It's Carrie Dahl. Thank you so much for venturing into the inner circle with me. If you subscribe to my podcast and have been listening for a while, thank you. I appreciate you. If you're new, welcome to my circle, where the power of story is honored and I believe all voices need and deserve to be heard. As a former news anchor turned podcast host and public speaking coach, I know that stories are the most powerful way we connect as human beings. I feel privileged so many of you trust me with your stories, whether in my private Inner Circle Facebook group or right here on my podcast. Your story is your gift. Thank you for allowing me to share it with the world. Friends, I am constantly reevaluating my life and how I'm living it. Do any of you listening do this? Because from year to year, I find my life goes through dramatic changes. I mean, let's be honest, the last couple of years living through COVID and now this post-COVID world has taken us all on a wild ride and forced many of you, myself included, take a hard look at how we are living life. But I find this cycle has been ongoing for me for a while now. As many of you know, I left my job, the 6 o'clock news anchor at CTV, some 8 years ago. And I left because my intuition was screaming at me, telling me I needed to make some changes. Those of you who know me or have been listening to my podcast for some time know that I loved my job. For 20 years, I got paid for a hobby as a journalist and as a news anchor. But like any demanding career, there are sacrifices involved. And the biggest one that I was in a staring contest with was my desire to be more present with my kids. I couldn't drive them to and from school. I couldn't take them to their activities. And I didn't really know their teachers and their friends because my job was so demanding and there just wasn't time. But I wanted more time. And more importantly, I was obsessed with this drug called flexibility. I wanted to work hours that worked for my family. But in my career as a news anchor, that's just not possible. I mean, the news goes live at 6 o'clock. It's not as if we could pre-tape the news so I could go pick up my son from soccer. Quite honestly, I was busy. I was overwhelmed and exhausted. But I wore those emotions and that lifestyle like badges of honor. I know so many of you listening do as well. But why? Why do we do this to ourselves? I know my guest is going to speak to this because she too uses this expression and understands this way of living very well. So my intuition was screaming at me. And when the screaming got to be too much, I listened. I really listened. And when I did, I decided to make some monumental changes. As you know, I left my career as a news anchor. I released it with love and gratitude and decided to move into an entrepreneurial space with my own consulting company as a public speaking coach and podcast host, and then work in the background with my husband, Stephen, who, as you know, is a diehard entrepreneur and founder of our company, the Luxus Group. In doing so, I chose me. I chose my kids. I chose to create a life I wanted. Did it come with fear? Oh my gosh, like mountains of it. Did I doubt whether I was making the right decision every single day? Did I worry that I was going to fail every second of every day? But you know what? I did it. That was 8 years ago, friends. And I can tell you that it was the hardest decision and the best decision of my life. You know what else I learned? I am normal. Every woman who walks this path has experienced these same emotions, doubt, fear, failure, pushing myself into that highly uncomfortable zone, but still doing it. And today, I'm still doing it. My life continues to evolve, and so do my priorities. My son is closing in on his 16th birthday. Insert gasp here. My daughter is 12 years old. And my biggest priority right now is them. Not climbing the social ladder, but truly being present with them and soaking up every possible moment I have with them. I am totally drunk on my kids. I couldn't be happier. Scaled back my work to do this. And yes, this new decision comes with sacrifices, but the rewards know no limits, because once the time is gone, it's gone. There are no do-overs in this capacity. My guest today is going to shed light on this topic with her own journey, and wow, what a journey it is. Let me just say, I'm so excited for you to listen to her and this podcast, because you're going to learn so much. You're going to want to take notes, because she is powerful and her message and her lessons are powerful. Heather Chauvet is a leadership coach who helps ambitious, overwhelmed women. I love that she says that. Break free from their fears to courageously and authentically live, work, and parent on their own terms. She's a TEDx speaker. You guys go listen to her TEDx talk. It's so, so good. An author of Dying to Be a Good Mother. Can I just say I love the title and I need to read this book? And the host of the highly loved podcast, Emotionally Uncomfortable, with over 6 million downloads and counting. Go, Heather. Heather started her career as a social worker, helping adults understand children's behavior. But it wasn't until 2013 when a stage four cancer, friends, is the last stage. Bear that in mind. Stage four cancer diagnosis pushed her to dig deep and take a hard look and what was really important to her and what life and balance, ooh, I love the word balance. We'll dig into that later. And living courageously is really all about. Heather, wow, joining us from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. Thank you so much for stepping into the inner circle.
That was the best intro ever.
Oh, really?
Thank you. I love it.
Really? A little vulnerable, but hey, if we're going to go there, I need to honor that as well.
Yeah.
And you know, I need to say to everybody listening, I'm going to apologize about my voice today, because I was at my daughter's playoff volleyball game a couple nights ago and I cheered so loud. I think I lost my voice. So apologies about the raspiness.
I'll take over. I'll talk for you.
All right. Well, you know how it's done. Hey, I want to jump in with both feet, Heather, and I want you to take me back to December 21st, 2013. Tell me what the heck was going on in your life at that moment or that year. Like, go back there.
I've told this story and gone back to that moment so many times. And hindsight, of course, is always 20/20. Mm-hmm. But I remember being in that moment and feeling like I had no idea how I actually got there. Like, I was oblivious to the fact that I was in the hospital with my husband. I actually went the night before and went by myself so that he could stay at home with the kids. And what happened was I actually left before I was seen by a physician, because what? I told myself, I am not sick enough to be here. I am not in enough pain to be here. I am not worthy of being here. And I don't have time for this. So I went back home, went to bed. Next day, my husband's like, were you seen by the doctor? I said, no, there's a long wait. So he's like, I'm going to drive you there. We are going to be seen by a doctor and we are not leaving. Like, this is me just running away, right?
Heather, I'm hopping in. What were your symptoms and what did you notice about yourself and why did you go to the hospital?
Yeah. So that night when my husband brought me back, I walked in with a bloated abdomen. Like, I thought, oh, maybe I have a gluten allergy or something, but it was growing. It started to grow rapidly in like the last week or so. And I had mild back pain. What I thought I had way more symptoms than that. I was starting to lose weight. And I walk in, I let them know, I'm like, I'm here for mild back pain and abdominal bloating. And she's looking at me like, triage is upstairs for women who are pregnant. I'm like, that's the thing. I'm not pregnant. My abdomen just started growing and growing and growing. And finally, through a CT, and blood work, they immediately in the ER told me that I had cancer. They could see little tumors all over my abdomen, and it was a stage 4 sporadic Burkitt's lymphoma. And so what that meant was if it was dormant, it could be there forever. And then all of a sudden something just triggered it, and it was just a very rapid growing cancer. So there's many different types of cancer. Some of them are slow grow, some of them are rapid grow. So as soon as it started, it was like, boom, boom, boom. My life just moved super quick. And I remember walking out of the hospital that night. It was supposed to, I say supposed to be snowing because, you know, where we live in Ontario, there should have been snow coming down and it was raining. And I remember the rain just like, I felt like I was in a movie, and I just stopped and I looked up and I'm like, okay, God, universe, source, angels, I don't know who I'm talking to, but you finally have my attention. I will listen. And what that meant to me was 9 years prior to that, like this is, people assume that cancer was my awakening. Like that was the moment. That was not my first moment. 9 years before, when I became a mother at 18 years old, that was my wake up. So I was already into personal development. I was doing the things. I had mentors. I read the personal development books. I did the things. And I was just neglecting that part of myself that was trying to talk to me, like my body, my physical symptoms, my emotional symptoms, my spiritual symptoms, like my soul screaming at me. And I just kept running and running and running and running because I was absolutely terrified of failing, like failing as a mother, not being able to pay the bills. And it was just like, go, 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 check the boxes. Yes, I'll drink my green smoothie and go to yoga every once in a while, or I'll meditate for 5 minutes a day, but I wasn't actively listening. And so that was the night when I completely surrendered. And I would say I hit kind of a certain rock bottom, and I had to do what was required of me to heal, but I also had to like actively listen at the same time and like co-create and pick myself back up.
I love that you shared that story the way you did, because I know so many of my listeners can relate, and I can relate. That's why I shared my story off the beginning, because so often you just keep pushing and pushing, and I don't want to fail. I have to go harder. I can't stop. And you're putting out all of this positive energy and teaching things about take care of yourself. And that's what we represent as coaches. But sometimes internally, we're falling apart. And that's, you know, what essentially you were going through the same thing. Your body's screaming at you. You didn't want to listen because you were afraid of that failure. I know exactly how that feels.
Yeah. And at that time, my kind of message or how, because I was self-employed and I was coaching. I already left my job, my corporate job as a social worker, but I was very parent-child focused. And so what people were coming to me for was the symptom of their child's behavior. And so what I was supporting them with was that parenting relationship or their parent, like their child's behavior. But the feedback I was getting as we were going through our coaching was, I don't have time to implement this. I'm overwhelmed. My marriage is falling apart. I'm not fulfilled in my work. I don't have time to take care of myself, like the incredible overwhelm. And I kept saying, okay, but this is what we're focused on. And then so after my diagnosis, I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this women pretending that their needs don't matter. And I'm done with the conversations of like, how do I become a better mother? How do I become a better wife? How do I make more money? How do I, you know, get the promotion? How do I do all of these things when we realize like what we're actually after is a feeling? We're after like, people want to feel alive. They want to feel energized. They want to feel abundant. They want to feel all these things. And they think it's a thing or a relationship or somebody else's behavior or another promotion that's going to give them that. But what they're actually craving is something from the inside out. So if you don't know how to do it from the inside out, like the outside in is not going to fulfill you.
Never. Right. So when you decided to make those changes, what were you feeling when you finally said, I'm walking away? This is, I'm finally listening. God, universe, I surrender. There's a lot going on in your life at that point.
Yeah. Like, it was
just
interesting
to hear the words cancer, like, let's hold space for that, mm-hmm. what that was like.
I actually talk about it in my book that apparently a month or two before I said something to my husband, I said, wouldn't it be interesting if I had cancer? Like, what? Those words came out of my mouth. It was it was something that I said because it was a thought that I was thinking. And that to me was evidence that, like, my intuition was saying, like, pay attention, something is very wrong. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mm-hmm. no way. There's no way. There wasn't even a reason why that thought would come to my mind, but it did. And it came out of my mouth. And I was like, trust yourself, like, trust yourself on a deep, deep level. And so I slowed right down. Everything kind of went into slow motion, but I felt like all the work that I did, like, the previous 9 years and from a personal development perspective, mm-hmm. got me there. So it was like I was training for that moment, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So I just, there's another story I tell in the book, and I've told this over and over and over again, where, like, fear is paralyzing. We all know this. And so many people live from a place of fear. Mm-hmm. Every single time I'm talking to somebody, it always comes down to fear. And there was a moment in between treatments where I was home and I, like, woke up in a full-blown panic attack at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I go to the bathroom and I'm, like, holding it in, like, you know, you're trying to cry, but you're trying to, like, hold it in because I didn't want to disturb my family. And what was going through my mind was, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die, because I was terrified of dying. I was like, I had nothing left. I was at the bottom. And I somehow mentally coached myself and got myself to be present. And I remember thinking, okay, you're here. You're not dead yet. Like, you are here. You are physically here. If you don't want to feel dead, how do you want to feel? I want to feel alive. Okay. So now I'm, like, out of the past into the present, and then somehow was able to get my brain to not focus on the shit of, like, how I didn't want to feel, but what I did desire. Okay. I'm like, it's only up from here. Like, the only way out is through. You're backed. You're against the, what do you call it? Your back is against the wall. Your back is against the wall. The only way out is through. Yeah. You have no certainty, right? You have no certainty and you do not have safety. You can't run back anywhere. The only way out is through. You have no other option but to have faith. You have no other option but to jump into the unknown. So I didn't want to live from a place of fear because I knew that was not in alignment with how I wanted to feel. Mm-hmm. I knew that was not going to get me closer to my goal. So in that moment, I'm there, I'm present. I'm like, Heather, how do you want to feel? How do you want to feel? How do you want to feel? And I'm like, okay, I want to feel alive. I want to feel alive. I want to feel alive. Oh. And then fear washed over me again. And I was like, I actually don't know how to feel alive. That's terrifying. I, in that moment, could not remember how, like, any moment in my life, how I felt alive. And so the title of the book, Dying to Be a Good Mother, was literally that. I'm dying, we're dying mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually to be good for other people. So I could not go back in any time in history and be like, oh yeah, when I did this, I felt completely myself. I became a mother when I was 18 years old. Like, I lost so much of, like, that identity shift, right? Like, who am I? Didn't know who I was. So then I'm stepping into this unknown of, like, what does aliveness feel like? Like, what do happy, alive, energized, fulfilled people look like? So then I go out into the world and I'm trying to find women raising children who are also going after what they want in their career, who are doing it from a place of, I'm not going to say ease, but, like, from a healthy place and not a burnt out place. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find anybody. It was like, yeah, I'm thriving in my career. I feel like I'm failing at home. Well, I quit my career because I'm doing this. And I was like, no, I need to blaze my own path. So then I started living my life from this place of, how do I want to feel? I want to feel alive. Okay, cool. What would an alive person do? Well, I have nothing today, so I'm going to wake up in the morning. I'm going to take a shower. That is one little vote getting me closer to how I want to feel. And I just kept doing that over and over and over and over again in all areas of my life, slowly getting to this point where I'm like, how good can it get? How good can I feel? How much can I have? How much of a connection can I create with my children? How much, like, how can I make a bigger impact? And just blazing my own path because I had to do it from a state of survival. Mm-hmm. And then I just started teaching other people how to do that.
Let's go back to that where you were going through this in your mind, though, and the reality of the diagnosis is hitting you. You're mom of three, right? How mm-hmm. did you tell your kids and your husband that mom's going to go on, you know, the ride of her life over the next while? Like, how did you approach that?
Yeah. My husband was with me when I got the diagnosis, and I just remember looking at him and watching his like whole face drop and just sob. And I'm not going to lie, he was one of the most, we have talked about this publicly and it's going to make me cry. I was angry because I could see that he did not have the emotional skills to show up for me. That it was like, I had to carry him too. Mm. And I realized how much emotional baggage I was holding for so many people, not just my children and my husband, but like my family, that I was always the strong one. So that when I became the person that needed support, they had no freaking idea how to support me. So I remember telling my children, and for a little bit, I had guilt about my diagnosis of like, I'm going to screw up my children. And then when I, you know, it's like, people are terrified to get divorced, or like, they're like, oh, there I go, I've already screwed them up or something. And I'm like, this is going to like imprint a deep wound in my children. My oldest was 9. My youngest was 1 year old. And I was like, this is going to screw them up somehow. And I remember having guilt around it. And mm-hmm. then I just kind of surrendered to like, this is the path. It is how you deal with it. I don't believe in like, I call it like, well, they call it toxic positivity. So it wasn't necessarily like, oh, we're going to be good. Everything's going to be great. I didn't act like that around my kids. It was like, this is what it is, but we don't need to act victims to it.
That's why I wanted to ask you that, is that there is that toxic positivity is dangerous.
And it's, I didn't try to act strong around my kids. Like, I remember moments of breaking down when I was scared and they were there, and I'm like, just don't hold it in. But I remember my oldest really struggling in school, like deteriorating, like academically. Mm-hmm. And my absolute frustration with how they handled it. Everyone is so uncomfortable with emotions. Everyone, like every human, is so incredibly uncomfortable with it, that when you have somebody who's falling apart or having a tantrum or just having a moment where like, how can I fix it?
Yeah.
And I could always feel that like fixing energy, people trying to fix my kids, people trying to distract my children, people literally trying to fix me because they were so emotionally uncomfortable mm-hmm. and it drove me nuts. So through that process, I just really learned like, how do you feel? Amazing. Like, feel it. My oldest was 9 at the time. And I remember he wanted to get his ear pierced, and I knew he wanted to get it done because it was something he could control. Yeah. And I was kind of against him getting his ear pierced, but I was like, it's just a hole. It'll close up. We went to the mall. I was bald and didn't wear a hat, didn't wear a wig. And I was like, let's get your ear pierced. It's a moment of connection. I think it lasted a week and then he took it out, but I remember just like, again, it brings me back to that moment, but like watching him process and go through his own stuff and me just being like, you're not broken. We're going to get through this. I refuse to yell out of anger and frustration. let's just be human together. So yeah, I didn't hide a lot, but I showed up for their emotions when I could.
Oh gosh, that's so powerful. I love the line that you use when you say, let's be human together and let's sit in these emotions instead of trying to cover them up or fix them, right? Yeah. And I wanted you to talk about this and dig into it because you've walked this path. And you said something also very powerful a little while ago where you thought you were going to screw up your children. It's so normal. Anybody with that cancer diagnosis, like, oh my gosh, what am I doing to my kids? Any mom, it's that first thought. That's how we think. And that's why I wanted you to dissect it and talk about it. So other people who are walking this path, it's normal to say that. Just don't judge. Just know that it's part of the journey. So that part of sitting in those emotions, it's just like grief. It's really freaking uncomfortable to sit in grief and to sit with someone who's grieving, but you can't fix it. So, and the same with you, you are walking a hell of a journey. So with your children, you get this diagnosis, stage 4. Heather, where did it go? How long was treatment and how do you beat stage 4?
Yeah. So that was like 9 years ago, and actually this December, and I believe it's 9 years. I am so not disconnected. I just don't identify as a cancer survivor. Like it feels like another life, which is why it's so far away. But I was in aggressive treatment first of all, I had a lot of beliefs around, I was in the holistic sector before this happened.
Okay.
And there's a lot of beliefs around everything, right? Everyone has their opinion about like Eastern, Western, whatever. And everyone tells you what you should do with your body. and then people give you these books and there's like a lot of aggressiveness of opinions. So I didn't really have time. That was my thing. I didn't have time. I didn't have choice. Like, you know, I was in a crisis state. So I always say I didn't have the privilege of choice because of the lack of choices I made previous to that. Mm. I was in a crisis state. Like green juice was not going to shrink my tumors at that time, nor did I have the resources to get additional support. So I surrendered. I listened to my doctors, but I also did integrative medicine and I went through 4 ridiculous rounds of chemo where I would be in the hospital for like a week or two at a time. And the second my counts would go back up, boom, they would hit me again. And it was like, I felt like I was a fighter, like in a boxing match and you just like get punched in the face and right mm-hmm. when you like come to and just trying to parent and also run a business at the same time, because I didn't have the privilege of not working at that time, doing calls from my hospital bed. But I remember wanting to, of course, run away from disease, like getting out of that survival state and then being told I'm in remission, like pretty quickly in remission, and that I have a year, right? Dependent on research, I have a year to like, if it's going to come back, it'll come back in that year. Okay.
Oh my
and
God.
I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. So I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm going to go into like do my research, go into integrative medicine, did all the IVs, did everything I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point where I was like running, not running away, like from a state of fear, but now I'm in this like mindset of optimization. So I'm like, how good can it get? I am healthier than I've ever been in my entire life. I feel better than I did probably as like a small child. I'm always like, what's next? How can I reverse aging? Like I love watching and observing people. Like there's a few people I follow on Instagram. They're like 80 years old and like weightlifters and they're ripped and they started like 3 years ago. And I'm like, I want to know her mindset. I want to know like what her beliefs are about life. And I am obsessed with not being normal. Like being mediocre, or being normal, or when people are like, oh, you get older, this is what happens to you. That's a cultural belief. I don't want to be normal. So I'm always just being wildly proactive and curious. And there's a whole other world out there. And it's just fascinating to me. So I feel healthier than ever. I'm thriving in all aspects of my life. Yeah. And I've said this many, many times that cancer saved my life.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Why do you say that? And let me just hold space. I got to hop in and say, you look phenomenal. You look like a freaking supermodel. So, I mean, gorgeous. But going back now, you said 9 years post.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, why did cancer save your life? And how was it to hit that 1 year remission where you're like, yeah, you made it through a year, you're cancer free. And it's been 9 now. So talk about that.
It saved my life because it actually kicked my ass to learn how to live. Mm. There's not a lot of people that are actually living. They're just existing. They're just surviving. And it saved my life because I actually think it made me confront parts of myself that I, you know, in stories that I used to tell myself, like, I am not worthy of feeling good. I am not worthy of having good things. Or I grew up in a family who didn't have a lot. Mm-hmm. Like breaking those generational patterns. And it, again, that going back to when I said my back was against the wall, it forced me to, that there was no back door, that I could allow fear to be the reason why I didn't take action on something. So it forced me to go through. It forced me to look at, how do you want to feel? What do you want? And once I started gaining momentum, I was like, look at, here's the breadcrumbs. There's data that this is possible. You just have to rinse and repeat and keep going and keep going and keep going. And it really taught me how to like master my mind, master my emotions, and not live in a state of survival. And the interesting part is being so far removed from that version of myself, I mm-hmm. see very clearly now other people's stuff. Like when someone's like, oh, I just can't do this. And I'm like, is that true? Well, I could. I'm like, just keep going, pull back the layers. Yeah, I'm absolutely terrified. Cool. Just acknowledge it. But mm-hmm. I can see it so clearly now. And I see why people get to where they are versus those that just refuse to move.
Mm-hmm. So once you came to this realization, how did you understand this mindset shift? What did you do with your life? How'd you change it?
I just started asking myself, what do I want? And I'm going to retract that. I talk about this journal prompt a lot that I use. And I think it was before my diagnosis. I use it with my clients. I give it away all the time. It is, wouldn't it be nice if? And the reason why I like this journal prompt, wouldn't it mm-hmm. be nice if, is because it's not what do you want. What do you want can be very confronting. So it's like, wouldn't it be nice if? There's not attachment to it. And everything I was writing down, those were my desires. It was things that I actually did want or things that I was craving, from something small to, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have anything on our calendar this weekend, to, wouldn't it be nice if I could have a glass of water right now? Wouldn't it be nice if I didn't have to worry about money? Wouldn't it be nice if, like, the small things, the big things. And I just started crossing things off the list. And when I started crossing those things off the list, that manifested into my husband being able to leave his 9-to-5, his day job, working within the company that I created, mm-hmm. where we get that time flexibility. People call it time freedom, but I'm like, you're only free if you're free in your mind. It's mm-hmm. the flexibility to be able to work anywhere in the world. So we're able to travel now. I want to call it alternative relationship with my children, but just the thinking outside of the box when it comes to educating my kids, or if my child, you know, I have three boys with three very different brains. So it's like, yeah, this isn't working for you. Let's find a different way, right? Having the ability to have the resources to do that and invest in them and invest in their future and being fully present. And now the stage that I'm at, watching and observing, which is like the magic, how me just making those choices to say, what do you want? How do you want to feel? Mm-hmm. And choosing to live that way, how that has positively influenced other women in my life. Like watching them be like, I came to you at my rock bottom. I was completely burnt out. And I did not believe that you could support me or help me, that this process, like you're, you know, selling me snake oil or something. And I can't believe that I was able to take a month off and I generated more income than I ever thought, or mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time I yelled at my kids, or I just feel so happy and content in my body. And what needed to change was not what I thought needed to change. Like the possibilities that the ripple effect of what yes. happens when you choose to live that life that you want and desire.
Heather, tell us about your business.
My business. I support women who want to feel successful both at home and in their work, coaching, podcasting, speaking, all the things. Mm-hmm. And it's really just opening up possibility for women that there is another way to be. Going back to that version of myself that was craving female leaders who were doing both successfully, air quotes, successfully, whatever that means mm-hmm. To them. So yes. The podcast, the book, yeah.
And your husband works for you? You have a team of people working for you, or is it the two of you?
I have a virtual team that is all over. There's probably about 30 people now-ish between coaches, mentors, internal team, all the contractors that support me. It started with me. Then it started with me and like one little project manager, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's just blowing my mind because I literally started teaching children how to meditate and charging $10 a person. And then asking myself, how can I leave my job? Can I do this full time? And chronically just reinvesting in myself and learning new skills and growing and evolving. But yeah, my husband is the CFO of the company.
Wow. Congratulations. I mean, that's one hell of a journey and what you've created. So a day in your life might look like what? Like what's family business life look like for you right now?
Waking up on my terms, getting the kids off to school, or if they're home, they're home, working for a few hours, and then, but being so excited about my work, whether it's running a class, whether it's talking to people in the app that we do, whether it's connecting with other amazing people around the world, doing amazing things and collaborating. Yeah, usually going to the gym, doing some meal prep, mm-hmm. drinking my water, going for a walk, playing with the dogs, and also driving my husband a little crazy. I am the visionary. I have the big dreams. Not much will stop me. And he keeps me very grounded. And he comes along for the ride because he's like, you're going to do it. So yeah.
I wanted you to talk about that because that is like what you created. And it's, I'm sure in the women that you coach that I'm making them understand that's possible because you did that with your life and you got there.
One right? step at a time. Like it's mm-hmm. absolutely, it's everything in life is just about time and consistency. I think we've been taught a lot of do this for 6 weeks and then stop, you know, whether it's diet culture or food culture or whatever, fitness, all the things. It's like anything is possible. And yes, it takes time, but more importantly, It is the patience of consistency and doing less better. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like letting go of perfectionism, just chipping away one day at a time.
Oh, there's so many issues now and concepts I want to dig into. I wanted to talk about your life and your battle with cancer, but there's a lot that you talk about in your TED talk and beyond that I would love to dig into and share some wisdom here. And the first one, this one resonated with me so, so much because I actually gave a talk on this as well. And I say the balance doesn't exist. I said, There is balance in there's only harmony. There's harmony in the imbalance. And I remember when I said that, the audience was like, huh? So you say balance is bullshit. So Tell us about that and the message that you want those listening to understand about balance.
I'm sure I could even just write a whole book on this as a topic, because the more and more I dig into it, the more I realize it's like, there's so much oppression and patriarchy around the term balance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the origin is, but it's fascinating to me how people use it as a marker, like possibility that it's like imperfection, like perfectionism is around balance. And I'm like, perfection doesn't exist.
Agreed.
So for me, my life is never, I don't want to say in balance, because let's just pretend like that is an illusion. It's not there. But the way that I see life is, am I living in a state of survival? If I'm living in a state of survival and something happens, I'm going to be in a crisis state.
What do you mean by that? Living in a state of survival. Explain what you mean by that.
So I'll give you an example. When my diagnosis happened, I was living in a state of survival financially, mentally, physically, emotionally, and probably not spiritually, but most areas of my life. Parenting was okay too, because I was actively working on that. My marriage was not awful. So you have all these buckets of your life. And when you're avoiding these buckets, or you're not full in those buckets, you're in a state of survival. So then I get a diagnosis and all the cards just fall. Everything falls. So now my financial insecurity is heightened. I'm terrified of money, right? My health was deteriorating. I was in a state of survival mode. So fast forward, I'm like, how do I get to this state of what I call momentum? And then above momentum is thrival. And then above thrival is like, holy crap, I never knew this was possible. My life is amazing. So I wanted to get to the state of thrival. Everyone wants to talk about thriving. Well, you got to actively pursue things, right? So I actively looked at my money and I was like, how do I get to, like, if this happened again, or I had to take 6 months off, how do you get to that where it's, you have more than enough? You're not just paycheck to paycheck. And I did that in all areas of my life. So I was thriving in all areas of my life. Then COVID happened. And I remember looking at my husband thinking, I'm having deja vu. Now the world is going to know what I went through, which is such a selfish thing to say. But whatever was not sustainable in your life knocked you down into a state of survival or crisis. And you were like, I can't handle that. Where COVID happened and I was able to go out into the community and be of service, whether it was virtual service, meaning like Zoom rooms and helping people and helping with coping strategies, or doing a can drive for the local food bank that had no cans on its shelf and just pick it up at everyone's doorstep. It was like, I had more to give so I could give when everyone else was in a state of survival. And so I always talk about how coming from that, like why serving yourself is of service to others, because when you are in a survival state, something happens, you're going to crash and burn. But if you are in a thrival state and something happens, life happens, there's a death, the kids get sick, like, you know, just with a cold and you're like, not again, you're not in this like emotional burnout survival state. You're like, I got this. I got way more in the tank. I can take a rest.
So back to the whole concept of balance is just an unattainable goal. Why you believe that? Because we're setting ourselves up for failure.
100%. And I just don't even know what that means. People are like, oh, let me check this box. Now I need to check this box, and like holding all these plates where I'm like, Does it feel good to you? That's me. I'm like, how does it feel? Well, I'm burnt out. Then you're clearly not in a state of balance and you never will be. It's alignment. So I'm always like, go from the inside out. How do you want to feel? Energized, alive, abundant, awesome. Now make a plan and every day start chipping away at that plan. There's ways to do that in a very sustainable way that like nobody will ever notice. And you're just going to be slowly integrating. And then one day you're going to be like, oh, here it is. I feel it. And people will start noticing your energy. But if your habits aren't changing towards how you want to feel, you will never be able to get to that illusion of balance. It's a feeling that you're after. It's not this word.
I love that, the illusion of balance. And that topic opens the door to this conversation I wanted to dig into, because you talk about this a lot, how we need to unlearn a lot of things in our life.
Oh boy. Consciously.
Go, Heather, go.
Oh my gosh. Like, yes. I mean, there's the awareness of learning, right? And then the sub-awareness, like the subconscious of, especially as a woman, like having my husband get the kids off to school in the morning and me feeling like I'm failing because I am not, because I'm choosing to sip my coffee from my bed. That makes me a bad mother. Like I still get that physical reaction. And when I do, I can observe myself and be like, no, like you're okay. Yeah. But I'm watching and observing. That is like so subconscious. That is cultural. That is generational. Mm-hmm. So there's like the unlearning of like watching and observing how you react to something. When I'm working with somebody, I'll tell them, like, there's a concept I teach, which is called energetic time management. It's managing your energy, not your time. So there's a whole process to it, but sometimes they even have a hard time putting themselves on their calendar. Then when they do, even for 10 minutes, I'm like, why didn't that happen? They're like, oh, so-and-so texted me. This person needed me. I'm like, you have been born and bred to be a people pleaser. That is a coping strategy. The fact of like actually just pouring a little bit into your cup is so emotionally uncomfortable for you. There's so much unlearning that needs to happen because we're taught if we give anything to ourselves, we are taking away from somebody else. And you have to ask yourself, is that true? Like, is that actually true? And if you are utilizing, you know, critical thinking, you'll be like, no, that's not true. Intellectually, I know that, but my body and my mind don't know that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why we need to relearn, do the uncomfortable thing, step outside of our comfort zone. Yeah. Taking those risks.
What do you think in this journey for you has been the greatest thing that you've had to unlearn? Most powerful thing?
That my parents were just people doing the best that they possibly could. And their opinion won't make me happy, like who I should be for them. And that the average person is struggling, like most people are struggling. And a lot of people are wearing masks. I've been a pretty vulnerable person from day one. And I actually started podcasting from a place of like almost wanting to be heard. Because I was like, am I alone? Am I alone? Why is everyone else pretending that this is okay? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started telling my story and then people sending me DMs to say, yes, I'm struggling too. But it blew my mind how people perceive to be okay, but they're not really okay. Mm-hmm. That was very difficult to unlearn.
Going back to your parents, why was that? You said that without hesitation. Can you unpack that for me? Were you always striving to make them happy and leaving your own needs in the dust?
I don't think to make them happy. I was definitely in the position of mothering my mother. And there was a lot of anger and resentment there. And now in hindsight, especially now that I'm raising a teenager, like the mirroring that comes back where I'm like, oh my gosh. I was not an easy teenager. And then looking at her story and just it's so fascinating to me. And I'm using the mother wound as an example. And of course, there's always like mom and dad stuff. But it fascinates me how everyone can blame their parents.
Yeah.
And yet women in general are like, I don't matter. I don't matter. And yet everybody in the world essentially was influenced by their parents' emotional intelligence and their emotional upbringing. And women are like, I don't matter. Like me not taking care of myself actually doesn't influence my children at all. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is the core of everything. Like Mother Earth, like we are so freaking powerful and yet we think we're powerless.
Yes.
Or we feel powerless. And that when I look at my mom, it's actually a gift for me to heal because she's just so proud. And it's like, here, look, like, look, it's okay. Like letting go of that generational stuff as well, mm-hmm. knowing like everyone's just pouring their shit. It's like a relay race. They're just pouring their shit on the next generation yeah. until someone's like, I'm actually just not going to grab your little baton and I'm just going to run my own race. And I just want to say thank you for getting me here. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to heal.
Love it. So powerful. I love that you dug into that and so true for so many people. Yeah. It's like break the cycle, take ownership and start taking care of yourself. Right.
Yeah. And it's not it's not specifically my mother. Like it's the whole culture, right? Of who uh-huh. I'm supposed to be and gender roles and all of that. But of course I can blame her, but it's like, you know, if I think she's that freaking powerful, then maybe I should put the mirror to myself yes. and be like, start yes. owning it.
Another concept you talk about, and I love this, and I want you to dig into it as well, is you say most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life mm-hmm. we desire. So explain.
So that's actually a quote by Stephen Pressfield, who's the author, I want to say The War of Art, and I always mm-hmm. get it backwards because there's The War of Art, The Art of War. I think it's The War of Art, okay. Stephen Pressfield, uh-huh. magical book, magical human. And he talks about resistance. So the life that we live, say the quote again.
The quote again was the life we live and the unlived life we desire.
Yeah. It goes back to who we think we should be versus who we actually are. Mm-hmm. And I think digging deep into like, who am I? What do I want? What do I crave? What do I desire? And having the courage to step up and into that version of yourself, mm-hmm. leaving the job, leaving the relationship, having the emotionally uncomfortable conversation, saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be this. This no longer works for me. That takes courage. There's that version of you that mm-hmm. is possible, but it's uncomfortable. And then there's the version of you when you just do the things, check the boxes that you think you should do, or getting the education or the job that you should get. And then waking up one day and being like, who the hell am I? So yeah. There's two ways. One is emotionally uncomfortable. And the other one is two for a different reason.
Yes, it is. So what is the purpose of discomfort then? How does it serve us?
Resistance is magical. I love contrast. I love discomfort. But you need to know if it's there to get you to grow, right? You're doing reps in the gym and you're like, I got to get to 10 reps and you're at 7 and you're like, I don't want to do the last 3 because it's uncomfortable. That's where you're growing. You have to push a little bit. Don't hustle. Don't burn out. Just challenge your edges a little bit. And then there's the discomfort of avoidance. And because you're avoiding, now your anxiety is building. Now the discomfort is building. So there's beauty in that. There's beauty in the contrast. It's there to get your attention. It's either there to get you to grow and to lean in and be like, ooh, there's the resistance. I'm going to run towards the resistance. Or it's there to get your attention to say, you've been avoiding me. If you continue to avoid me, it's going to get way worse.
Why do you think, and this comes up in so many high-powered women that I know, busy, why do you think women wear busyness as a badge of honor? Like, I'm so busy. I'm so busy. I'm like, let's go do this. Oh, I'm so busy. Or I'm sorry I didn't get back to you, but I was in the middle of a board meeting. Or like, why?
It's a badge of honor. It's armor to protect ourselves. I think we live in a male energy world. And when I say male, it's not men. It's this masculine. We've lost our feminine, meaning mm-hmm. nurturing. It has been perceived as weak. We've been oppressed forever and ever and ever. We have superpowers, but we've just, again, been disconnected from ourselves. And so if you're not connected to yourself, then we lose ourselves in trying to be somebody else. And then to survive, you develop these coping strategies and you just... The walls and the armor get thicker and thicker and thicker. And the busyness actually comes from you doing, not being. And so you're doing for other people. But if you don't actually have like a vision or a guidance, like I tell people all the time, I work with a lot of women in corporate and they think they actually don't have control over their time. I'm like, you don't yeah. need to leave your job. You might have to, but that doesn't need to be step one. You don't need to leave your job to get freedom. You might actually say, hey, can we move that meeting from this time to this time? And you just like start with these slow boundaries. And I get it. The energy comes back to you and all the things, but slowly you're taking your power back and you're teaching other people how to treat you. And I always say busy is a symptom. It is not a way of being. And so when you're chronically busy, you need to look at that as like an itch or a hive or like blood oozing from your arm and being like, I think I should get this fixed. It's not a personality trait. You've just been go, 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 go. It actually is indicative of survival state. Yes. So stop. Realign, reassess. And if you don't know how to do that, then get support. But when people are like, you must be so busy. I'm like, my life is full. I don't feel mm-hmm. busy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That distinction is so, so important. I love the analogy you gave there. You coach so many women, people from all over the world. Tell me what's coming up most right now in your coaching. Is there a recurring theme? Is there a state that a lot of people are finding themselves in? What's screaming at you right now?
It's always been the same of burnout. And there's two types of people. The ones that are ready to let go of that version of themselves. Like they're like, I'm all in, I surrender. And then there's the people who resist surrendering. And because my community is full of people who are ready, because I talk about it all the time, they're like, let's do this. What I actually find on the inside, once the work starts happening, is the fear of losing people because they're thriving. So they don't identify no longer with other women who want to create connection through suffering or lack. So it's finding new friends in your life or new people. So it's actually this fear of thriving because it's like, why did I wait so long to get here? I've been sold this story that it wasn't possible. And you've shown me a completely different way of being. And yeah, it's just like they're jumping into a different culture, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, it does.
Yeah.
Thank you for holding space for that question. I can't close this podcast without a few questions. Tell me what it was like writing your book. Like a book is a massive undertaking. Massive. Was it hell?
Yeah.
Like it describe was, that. Why was it so awful?
It was wildly emotionally uncomfortable, mainly because I had some really strong stories around my ability to write. I grew up with like undiagnosed learning disabilities and I could barely read and write. As a child, I actually started getting better at reading and writing when I had children. And then when I started my business, because I had to blog and do all those things. And so that resistance was intense, but I hired a lot of support to help me. That working through that, asking for help, knowing what I needed, seeking it out. But I'll tell you that when the book was complete, something in me felt like it healed. Like there was a little wow. puzzle piece that was put in place. And I was like, that was worth it. That was worth the journey.
Why do you think that is?
Because I was going to depths of a story, unpacking it. It was like therapy on steroids. And what I have learned since then, doing a lot of things, like I'm now becoming obsessed with endurance races. And like, I just ran my first full marathon, and I love challenging myself mentally and physically. And I wasn't like that before, but when I do something that I don't think I can do, and then there's evidence that the completion was there, I gain more self-trust. I gain more confidence, and everything else in my life gets a little bit easier. Because mm-hmm. if I could do that thing that I didn't think I was capable of doing, I could do that other thing that is entering my life and challenging me.
So with your obsession with endurance, what does this next chapter or next few years of your life look like? Where are you going? What do you want to achieve? Have you mapped that out?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. The next one is called 29029, and it is this 36-hour hiking relay where you go up and down a mountain, which is the equivalent of the Everest elevation.
Yes.
And so you go up, and then you go down a gondola, up, down for 36 hours, and we're going to see what happens.
You seem excited about it. It's obviously serving and feeding your soul.
Yeah, there's, you know, you get to a point, like when I did my marathon, I did two halves previously. And at the beginning of 2022 in January, I was like, I don't think I can do a full. Let's sign up for the full. And then I started training, and I let go of the goal and I committed to the training. And my goal was just to cross the finish line. I didn't care if it took me 12 hours. So people are always obsessed with like, what's your pace? And I did. Yeah. We did intervals the whole time, and I crossed that finish line because my goal wasn't perfection. It was just consistency. And I can't tell you, like, you, again, you get to a point in the race where you're like, the only way out is through. There's something about that where I take away all of the ability to back out. And I'm like, you're in it. You literally have 10 more miles to go. Like, you can't turn around. It's longer mm-hmm. to go back. So the only way out is through. Even if you walk the next 10 miles and the lights shut off and everyone leaves you, you're with yourself. And there's something in that where the magic happens and your brain changes. And that is what I'm becoming obsessed with.
What do you want to leave our listeners with? A thought?
If it's in you and you desire it, it was for you. And the more you avoid it, the bigger it's going to get. So you can avoid it your whole entire life, but eventually it's going to keep you up at night. Start paying attention.
You are awesome. You just spew brilliance. I could go on and on and on with you all day. And I know everyone is going to love this podcast. Where can people find you? Give us your handles, your website. Go.
Yeah. So I am very active on the podcast, Emotionally Uncomfortable. I have a really neat quiz. It takes 2 minutes. You can go to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/life quiz. And it kind of shows you where to focus your energy and attention. And then I give you a whole bunch of free resources. So is it time management? Is it finding more purpose in your life? Is it focusing on your boundaries or, you know, emotional intelligence, all the inner leadership stuff that's not black or white. So I love that stuff. So you can go there. And the book, Dying to Be a Good Mother, can be found anywhere books are sold online and Audibles as well.
Heather, I celebrate you. You know, you've worked hard. You've been on an incredible journey, and I'm thrilled for your successes because I love what you're putting out to the world. And I love the way that you're leading so many women down a very, very powerful path. So congratulations. Thank you so much for holding space for this conversation. And I'm going to continue to cheer you on from the sidelines because you are doing great things. Thanks for stepping into the inner circle today.
Thank you, Carrie.
I want to end today by extending my gratitude to you for listening. You know, time is our most precious commodity. We don't have enough of it most days. So I am so grateful that you shared some of your precious time with me. Thank you so much. For show notes and links to our guests and everything we talked about today, you can head to my website, carriedoll.co. That is CarrieDoll.co. Once you're there, you can find links to Instagram and Facebook. You can sign up for my newsletters and get information on my public speaking courses. I want to empower women and people everywhere to use their voice, to invest in themselves, and to be comfortable anytime, anywhere, giving a powerful, unforgettable speech. speech. Come with me. Join the movement of the Inner Circle. Let's go on this journey together.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.